General Motors is seeking U.S. government approval for a fully autonomous car, one without a steering wheel or pedals, to enter the automaker's first commercial ride-sharing fleet in 2019. The Cruise AV will be able to open doors for passengers who can't and will have other accommodations for hearing and visually impaired customers. The car will be able to operate in hands-free mode only in pre-mapped urban areas.
I think Mark Zuckerberg has been very clear that this is a, you know, a risk to perhaps short-term sort of user engagement, if you like. But the idea is that it will give people a better experience on Facebook. So rather than people just sort of coming on, spending a lot of time on there, just watching videos that media companies have published to their news feeds, they're going to come and they're going to actually interact more with friends. They're going to see a lot more from their families, and potentially long-term, at least the hope is, that's better for Facebook. That makes it a more attractive place for people to go.
Dropbox is this $10 billion private file sharing company. It's one of this class of unicorns that we've been watching, who has been waiting for quite a while to list. It is filed, and one person told me that we expect this listing to happen in the first half of this year. We will be watching this closely. It comes in the ranks of Spotify, another deal that's looking to list this year. And also, I know that that Wall Street and Silicon Valley will both be watching this deal very closely because of how Snap performed since it listed in 2017. That was kind of a debacle-less IPO after it listed in March.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's January 15. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, 5:10 in the morning. And it's a holiday for the markets today. Probably a holiday for some of you as well. A lot of the schools are closed today. But if you do have plans to get out and about this morning, watch out for the slippery roads and expressways. Mary will be here throughout the morning to give us an update on traffic. And also this morning, Vic Vaughn will be in the newsroom watching all of the snow-related news. You heard there in the opening, 3 to 6 inches of snow possible before it's all said and done. Lots going on this morning here on the show. In a minute, we'll welcome in our CEO for our CEO Spotlight today. Tremaine Atkinson is here. He's the CEO of CH Distillery in Chicago. And a little bit later on in the program, we'll give you some fitness tips, especially if you're a baby boomer couch potato. Jamie Brunkus will be here with some tips on how you can get off the couch. Start a little slow if maybe you're not one of those fitness gurus already. All happening today on the program. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, we'll begin in Asia, where markets are open today. The markets seem to be mixed there, with the Nikkei and the Asian Dow higher in trading today. The Hang Seng in Shanghai looking at lower numbers. In Europe this morning, markets are generally lower. The FTSE is off. The DAX and the CAC are all lower as well. We'll watch what markets are open today through the hour here on the Opening Bell. A couple of other stories we're watching for you today. Frenetic selling in the closing weeks of 2017 saw Airbus beat Boeing in the jet market, global jet market. The annual order contest goes to Airbus for a fifth year running. But doubts remain over the future of the flagship A380. The European plane maker said today net orders after cancellations rose 52% to 11,009 aircraft last year, ahead of Boeing's 912 net orders. Airbus posted about 1,229 gross or unadjusted orders, compared with Boeing's 1053. Greece, the people there are without public transport for the day, and services nationwide face disruptions as Greek labor unions strike to protest further demand measures to be voted on by the parliament there. And in Brexit, there are more talks going on with leaders of the UK and with the European Union about leaving the European Union, with Britain leaving the European Union. One official there says he would rather stay in the European Union. This is Boris, their foreign secretary, than to do a soft Brexit, which has come up in recent days as talks continue to get UK out of the European Union, Britain out of the European Union. Those are just some of the stories happening out there today. It's going to be a slow day because it is a holiday in the market world. We're happy to have with us today in our CEO Spotlight, Tremaine Atkinson. He's the CEO of CH Distillery in Chicago. Tremaine, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Tremaine, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning.
We are happy to have you here. Not
because you brought us stuff to drink, but because you're really hitting your stride in the city, aren't you?
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun. We started off about 5 years ago, and we love the city of Chicago. And we source our ingredients from just outside the city or within the city, and we just really wanted to become part of the drinking fabric of this amazing drinking town.
Yeah, and you have done that too in terms of the concrete place where you, one of the places where you work, goes back into the history of drinking in Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. So we started off in the West Loop, where we still have our flagship distillery and pub, which is called the Bar and Table at CH Distillery, and it's 564 West Randolph. And we outgrew that pretty quickly because our product was selling well. And so we expanded to this amazing space in Pilsen, on the east side of Pilsen. And it's the old site of the Schoenhofen Brewery, which in about 1900 was one of the biggest breweries in the city of Chicago. And then, of course, it got wiped out by Prohibition and sat kind of unused for a long time. So we've brought it back to life, making lots and lots of delicious vodka and other products there.
Talk to us a little bit about the facility. I've seen pictures of it online, haven't been there in person yet, but it looks like you have really turned this into an all-purpose, back to its normal use kind of state, right?
Yeah. We needed industrial zoning for manufacturing, and Pilsen has got that. And also, we wanted to be still very close to downtown and to our original facility. So it was such a perfect location, which is, of course, why it was there in the first place. And We loved the idea of bringing alcohol back to life, in a place where Prohibition had killed it.
And it's in this time, too, where we have so much local sourcing of goods and ingredients. Talk to us a little bit more about that. You mentioned that the grains come from right here in the Chicago area. What do you look for in that? And what's the process in choosing something like that?
Yeah, vodka is often thought of as something that doesn't have any taste or flavor. And when it's well made, it does have some really subtle notes to it. So we wanted to use something local to reflect what a local vodka should taste like. So we talked to farmers in Kane County and tried a couple of different combinations of grain. And what we settled on is wheat and rye that's grown literally just 60 miles outside of the city. And it's absolutely perfect grains for making vodka. And it's definitely got a local terroir to it. Which you don't hear about vodka all that often, but we've got it.
What was that word again?
So terroir, which sounds like terroir. like a fancy wine snob term, which it is, but yeah. It means that the alcohol tastes like the place that it comes from. And that's a really cool thing to be able to do in a local spirit.
And what would you say that taste is? What is that flavor?
Well, what you'll find when you drink our vodka is that first and foremost, it's smooth. And that's because, we take care to really distill it. We make it all the way from scratch from the raw grain. And you'll pick up a little bit of sweetness from the soft red winter wheat that we use and a little pepperiness from the rye. And it tastes a little bit like the winter that wheat had to go through in order to come up in the spring.
Yeah, very interesting. And it's interesting too that you don't pick the grains that are already grown. Did you actually go to these farmers and say, hey, we want you to grow this?
We went to them and asked them what they thought were their best grains. Okay. And we worked from there. We didn't want to force them to do something that didn't make sense. So we just wanted to get their best stuff.
So it's more than just vodka. It's bourbon. It's all kinds of liqueur, other things. What is the best seller among the group, or are they all pretty popular?
Yeah, you can. Well, Steve has a nice collection of little mini airplane bottles here in front of him of our various products. Vodka is still the number one seller and probably always will be. We have a cocktail bar at our original distillery in the West Loop, and the liquor license that we have allows us only to serve what we make. So it provides a really interesting challenge for bartenders, because we can't bring in outside spirits or beer or wine or anything else. So they motivated us to make lots of different good cocktail products, and that's what you got in front of you there.
Yeah, so we got one of them is a Bitter Dog bourbon, a liqueur, I should say. You've got a dry gin here, a Fernet Dogma. What is this? This is another liqueur. All kinds of good stuff here. I mean, it's thank you, first of all, for bringing all these in. I don't even know where to start. Where should somebody start that hasn't been a craft liquor aficionado?
Yeah, I would say always start with a flagship product, which in our case is vodka, and then kind of work your way through from the lighter colored stuff to the darker colored stuff. So to gin, and then to rum, and then to aquavit,
yeah.
And then on to bourbon, and then into some of the liqueurs, which are intended as not only cocktail ingredients, but also after dinner drinks. So they tend to be herbal and bitter and citrusy and all kinds of interesting flavors. And they do, by the way, go well in your coffee also. So
yeah, that's we were hoping,
since we are here early in the morning.
Exactly. It's you know, almost lunch for us, but let me ask you about what it's like being a CEO at a distillery. What's your day like?
It's great. It's the best job I've ever had. It's my dream job. So I get to, first and foremost, I'm very hands-on with the actual making of the product and quality control, which means tasting every batch to make sure it's good. It's an important job. And then as a CEO, you know, when you're a CEO of a company, like 5 years ago when it was just the two of us, my old friend Mark Lucas, who runs sales, and I run operations and distilling and the other stuff, you know, being a CEO doesn't mean anything. As you start to get a little bit bigger, what it means is hopefully becoming a decent leader by example for your staff and kind of setting the tone. But I always stay hands-on because it's what I love the best.
You say you never, this is your dream job, but at one point did you realize this is what you wanted to do?
It's funny, you know, so I got this bug from my dad. My dad at 23 years old had three kids and was a poor college professor. And so what did he do? Well, who doesn't need a drink more than that guy, right? But he doesn't have any money. So he made beer at home. And so I was around that from the beginning. So when I got a little bit older, my brothers and I started making beer together and tried to scrape enough money together to start a brewery back in the early 90s. But that didn't quite work out. So I felt into the corporate world for 20, 25 years, but never lost the dream. And finally, you know, I basically scrimped and saved everything I made so that I could start up this company. And so I'm very fortunate to get to be able to do what I love.
And there are probably dozens of people out there listening right now who are in that position. How do you know when it's the time to jump into that direction of what you want to do? What is it that has to come together for your dream to finally start taking off? How challenging is it?
It's definitely a personal thing, but I know for me, I felt a burning inside that I had to do this. And the tricky part, though, is if you're going to start up a new business, the single most common cause for failure for new business is being undercapitalized. You know, I've read a whole lot of business plans that talk about getting to break even in 3 years and then the exit strategy for 3 to 5 years. And you start it up and then you realize, oh, boy, it might take us 5 to 7 years to get to break even. And you've got to have enough capital to pad that. And that doesn't mean that you're not doing a good job. It just means it's always harder than you thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit at some numbers here. First of all, the amount that you're distilling every year. I saw one report late last year. You're in the hundreds of thousands of gallons a year.
That's our capacity. Yeah. So we're working our way towards that. So we should reach at the end of this year about 20,000 cases in sales this year, and our production capacity is significantly higher than that. So we have room for growth, which was the reason for putting the Pilsen distillery in place.
In bars throughout Chicago, what's mainly your client base?
Yeah, probably our biggest client base are bars and restaurants in the city of Chicago, but also retailers, so Binny's and Whole Foods, you know, Foxtrot for delivery, things like that. And then we've started to expand nationally as well. So we're available in 14 states now, and that's another growth path for us. But we still have lots of growth left for us in our own hometown.
Is it just about getting your product in front of bartenders and in front of these owners of these bars? How do you do that? And is it just giving them a taste, or do you put on shows, or how do you get your product out there? How does that work?
Yeah, still the single best way to sell a product like this is to put it in front of somebody and drink it with them. And so we will go into bars And, you know, we'll make an appointment, go in and taste through the portfolio. And one of the things that we've done to give ourselves an advantage is that we have really interesting products that are relevant for bartenders, for craft cocktails, for regular drinking. And they're all handmade. They're all from scratch. They're all local. So they hit all the things that people are looking for, but they're priced competitively with the big guys. So we're trying to give people the choice to, drink local, drink great, but not have to pay more mm-hmm. for it.
What is the magic sweet spot for a price point on something like this?
You know, for our vodka retails for $20 a bottle. So it's not the $9.99, special on the bottom shelf. Right. You don't want to drink that. But for a real true ultra premium vodka, $20 is a really nice price point.
And the demographic, who's drinking this?
Everybody basically who drinks, unless you're drinking bottom shelf stuff, but anybody who likes good stuff, but doesn't want to spend a fortune, that's our target market. And, that spans across the age groups.
The question I think was what I was getting at is there a demographic, for instance, are the millennials doing more of the craft cocktails than, say, Gen Xers? Or is it one group over another that likes drinking it straight or on the rocks or that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, millennials are doing a great job of supporting local and artisan producers because, I joke that I was sort of the original millennial. I'm not exactly in the age group, but that was when I was in my 20s. I loved to figure out, who was doing what. I wanted to know how things were made and drink local and do all of that stuff. And millennials have, as a generation, have really helped support businesses like ours, where we really want to do it right, do it honestly, and also do it at a price point, because millennials are famous for spending too much of their income on going out. I don't have a problem with that, but I don't want to take too much of their money. I want to let them be customers for a long time. So that's why we're priced well.
How would you compare or contrast Chicago to other cities where the craft, either beer or liquor distillery scene is? I mean, how do we do?
Yeah, we do great. We are absolutely one of the leaders nationally and internationally in craft cocktails, no doubt about it. So one of the things we're finding as we leave our home state and go to other markets is that people they recognize Chicago as a brand, as a place that really interesting things are going on in beverage, as well as food, of course. So Chicago sort of helps us. It kind of leads us into new markets.
Does the scene, the craft brewers and the local folks that are doing this as hobbies, do they help bring everybody up? Do you all sort of get together and talk? And is there maybe a consortium of ideas that are out there, or is it all independent of each other?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of camaraderie. We have a lot of camaraderie also with breweries as well, because the barrels that we used in our bourbon and also our Fernet, barrels live many lives. And so we'll pass them along to brewers who will then fill them with beer, and then they'll give them back to us, or another brewer will use it. And so there's a lot of fun that can be had, sharing among the industry.
I know some diehard craft beer folks, and they get very angry when their local craft beer sells out, as has happened several times. when does this craft not be craft anymore? Is it when you sell to Anheuser-Busch or whatever?
I think craft, to me, what craft means is you're really making it from scratch and making your own alcohol. So, for example, we ferment all the way just from scratch from grain. So we control the whole process. To me, craft, when it's done well, means artisan, which means doesn't mean that it's old fashioned. We use plenty of good, new technology, but it's taking the real legitimate process, like cooking from scratch at home. That's when you're always going to make the best meal instead of, buying cans of stuff. So,
yeah, I always say when I want to go out to eat ethnic food, there better be, if I'm going to an Italian restaurant, there better be a woman in a babushka making the noodles in the back. And in your case, you're on the floor testing all of this stuff on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah. In my babushka, by the way. Yeah. But yeah, I'm a real drinker. I love drinking and I love drinking good stuff. So, you should take some comfort in that I'm testing every batch. So
When you look to the future, what are your goals, let's say, for this year? And if you had to look 5 years into the future, what would you like to be?
Well, we just want to keep doing more of what we're doing. And making, you know, what we think are great spirits, selling them at a great price, growing the company, and having a lot of fun. And, if 5 years from now, if we're still doing that, I'll be as happy as could be.
Talk to us about your favorites here. There are about, I'm guessing, about 20 of the little bottles of the samples of what you do. What is your favorite? What's the CEO's favorite?
Well, I'm a vodka guy, and that's why that's our flagship. I wanted to make something that I love, so my go-to is CH Vodka on the rocks. After that, I love our London Dry Gin. It makes a great martini. It doesn't need anything else in it. And then probably our CH Amaro, which for after dinner is the perfect drink. It helps you digest a big meal, a little bitter finish to finish it off. So that's kind of the from lightest to darkest. And then in between, a Negroni that's made with Bitter Dog, and our CH London Dry is perfect and old-fashioned with bourbon and a Margot de Chile, which is our spicy chili liqueur. Gives it a little spicy twist. Mm-hmm. I could go on and on, Steve.
The dark matter liqueur, the coffee liqueur.
One of our absolute favorites. Dark Matter is our favorite local coffee roaster. And so we basically just cold brewed their coffee into CH vodka, added a little sugar, and called it a day.
this one I think I'm going to try first is the peppercorn.
That's a lot of fun. Great, obviously, in a Bloody Mary, and also really good with sushi, surprisingly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do we make mistakes when we drink like this? What are the tips? If we're going to go out and have a nice drink like this, how should we enjoy it?
You should enjoy it in whatever way you enjoy it the most. I'm a strong believer in that. Okay. If you're really interested in understanding what a spirit is about, taste a little bit of it neat at room temperature. That's always mm-hmm. the best way to understand what's really going on with it. And then from there, have fun with it. Use your imagination, pour it on the rocks, pour it in a cocktail, but just enjoy it.
Do we make any mistakes in keeping this? I know people have told me, because I like to keep vodka in the refrigerator or in the freezer. Is that a mistake?
No. If you keep it in the freezer and pour it on the rocks, mm-hmm. you'll get less dilution. So the vodka will taste a little bit stronger, but it will also be a little bit smoother because it's ice cold, which kind of that dulls the pure alcohol content of it a little bit. So you taste more of the flavor in it. It usually tastes a little bit sweeter.
How do people get to see this up close and personal? I'm guessing there are tours at the distillery and come in and taste as much as you want, right?
Yep, exactly. So we do tours at the bar and table at CH Distillery at 564 West Randolph, and those are Tuesdays and Saturdays at 5:30, and people can sign up at our website.
And I've always wondered this, if I become a fan of this, I'm sure I will, how do I tell my local tavern to bring this in? How do you do that?
Well, hopefully a lot of them will already have it, but mm-hmm. if they don't, just walk in and ask, hey, do you have CH? Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then walk out. No.
And what is the most surprising thing, would you say? Is there something that people don't know about this process that would surprise them?
Probably what a lot of people don't know about gin is that gin is flavored vodka. So the way you make gin is you take vodka and then you redistill it with juniper berries, which gives it that characteristic sort of piney flavor, and then any other ingredients. So when I hear people say, I don't like gin, I usually ask them if they like vodka, and then we kind of trick them into liking gin again.
Well, Tremaine, it's wonderful meeting you. Thank you for bringing all the samples, and all the best to everybody over at CH.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Tremaine Atkinson is the CEO of CH Distillery in Chicago. Make sure you follow them on Twitter, CH Distillery, same on Instagram, and you can find them online at chdistillery.com. And we're going to continue our conversation with Tremaine after the opening bell, after the bell, and post more in our podcast of the program later this morning at WGNradio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Glad you're here with us for our Monday edition of the opening bell. If one of your New Year's resolutions is to get in better health,
health and prosperity were two of your resolutions. You're going to need the first for the second, and we thought we'd spend a little time this morning talking about how you can get off the couch and do just that. Jamie Brenkus is with us, nationally known fitness expert, helping baby boomers get off the couch. Jamie, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
I'll tell you what, I can't wait to get Chicago in great shape. Wonderful.
This is, we're focusing, I think you're, this 20-day challenge, 28-day challenge focuses on baby boomers, but I think everybody can stay tuned for this because there's probably something everybody can learn. And Jamie, I have to tell you, just from a personal standpoint, the worst or the hardest part is actually starting this. So get us off and running. How do we get off the couch for that first time?
Steve, you know what? I think what we have to do is redefine what exercise is to us. And I think everybody thinks, oh, you got to spend an hour here, an hour there. And I think the biggest thing is that, you know, we all live hurried, hectic lifestyles, and the biggest thing that gets pushed aside is physical fitness or health. And so we're saying, you know, doing these smaller increments, a little bit here, a little bit there, exercise is accumulative, it all adds up. So, you know, I always focused on 8, because, of course, we did 8-minute abs, and we helped millions of people. And so if you give you 8, then it becomes 16, then 24. And so these smaller increments will work, and consistency beats intensity any day of the week, Stephen. That's for sure. But I tell people, you know, even if you're just starting out, do 20 push-ups a day. Now, if you're just a beginner, you can do them on the wall, Stephen. It doesn't even matter. But if you do 20 a day during the course of the month, that's 600 push-ups. Same thing, getting in and out of your seat. Let's say what we call a squat. So if you just touch your buns on a seat, get up 20 times, okay? That's 600 for the month. And then the last thing we do, a little smaller increments, is a plank. And people say, what is a plank? Even if you just, again, standing straight, lean over onto a bench or a table, put your elbows on the table, do that for 1 minute, okay? At the end of the month, that's 30 minutes of your core. And so all these little things add up. So don't think you got to bite it off right at the helm, and you have to say, "Well, I have to do an hour a day," because that's not realistic. It won't work, and that's how I start, you know, our exercise programs with clients, and it's worked over the years because it's not daunting, it's not overwhelming, and that's how you have to start first.
And it's interesting there. You didn't mention anything about having equipment. You didn't mention nothing about having a treadmill. I think a lot of people start thinking, okay, well, I've got to have the exercise equipment, or I got to sign up for a gym. You didn't mention any of that there.
No. Use your own body as resistance. That's what God gave us a body for. So no, because that's another barrier to exercise. And I thought, you know what? Geez, just get out there and move a little bit. Because if you rest, you rust. Believe me. And we have to get these baby boomers up and moving. And we all want to look younger and live longer and feel better. But that goes across the board, Stephen, right? I mean, everybody wants the same thing. So, but it gets a little harder when you get older. And that's why your best piece of fitness equipment is your fork and spoon. Don't let anybody fool you.
And that's, you know, part of your 28-day challenge is there's a diet part of that. Give us some advice where that's concerned. What should we be eating? How often? What are the things that are bad and good for us?
Oh, good. You know what? I tell people to keep it simple. Eat clean, lean, and green. And green, of course, is vegetables. You have to really like vegetables these days, because guess what? It fills you up but not out. The clean end of it is eliminate the empty calories, the cookies, the candies, the sweets. You know, those things can just add pounds to you, especially with the sugars. And the other one is just being lean. Green is protein. And again, that's chicken, fish, turkey, beef, pork, you name it. Lean meat is fine. Red meat is fine. But it has to be 3 to 4 ounces. Everybody thinks, well, geez, if I eat, you know, 10, 12 ounces of meat, your body can only assimilate so much protein. So, you know, when's the last time you went to a steak restaurant, they only give you a size of, 3 to 4 ounces, which is the palm of your hand. Probably get up and get out. So that's what we want to do. We want to keep focus on lean, clean, and green, but you can't go wrong. But portions are so important. So I tell people, look at your hand. Get handy. You know, the bottom line is the palm is where your proteins would go, 3 to 4 ounces. Your fist is the vegetables, okay? And just, you know, a handful of vegetables is great. And again, for the starches, like your pastas, your rice, your potatoes, again, it's the size of your fist. And for fats, it's the size of your thumb. And if you just look at that as a parameter and watch out with that portion distortion, because we all eat too much food, you don't have to train as hard. And that's the key, especially as we age. So, again, keep the portions at bay and focus on eating good, wholesome foods, but don't stop eating. That's the biggest problem I see out there. So we got to go on a diet. Don't go on a lifestyle. Don't go on a diet, because that's never going to work. That's short term, and that's what we try to tell people, and that works 100% of the time, Stephen. 100% of the time.
You know, one of the other benefits, I think, of having a structured program like the one that you have, this 8-minute series and also the 28-day challenge, is how important is the structure of not only, you mentioned the good things that we have to eat, but making sure that that's on our grocery list, making sure, too, that we have sort of a daily menu of things to follow.
Well, you know, because I always look at it and say, you know, it's a system. And lean, if you look at lean people, they lead lean lives, and it's their habits which make them lean. And we're talking about cooking, eating, shopping, fitness, but even more importantly, Stephen, thinking habits. And so what we try to do is we try to focus on behavior modification, making these small little changes which add up to huge differences in people's lives. Because you tell somebody that they gotta, you know, change 360 degrees, it doesn't work long term. Nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to change like that. So what I always try to do is make these little smaller increments, and it sticks. And once you get people having confidence that they can do it, and it doesn't disrupt their lifestyle and turn it upside down, they're going to stick with it. And that's the light bulb we need to have, you know, turned on with people. And once that happens, they're going to like it because they have more energy, they feel good, and that's what it's all about. And so you don't have to go crazy with diets and think you got to go to a gym and spend hours a day in a gym. It just doesn't work. It's not realistic. And I like to have programs that, you know, that people have real schedules, real jobs, you know, but they want real results. And that's what we try to do.
The other part of this, too, is people want to see results right now. And what, do they get frustrated after they don't see them right away? And so 28 days, that seems like a pretty pretty good first step, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, the thing is, I know we want instant gratification. That's us, right? We all want that. But you have to be realistic. You know, the weight didn't come on overnight. It's not going to come off overnight, okay? And I think that's realistic. And I know there's plenty of commercials out there saying, hey, give us a week and we'll take off 10 pounds. And that's really, I'd rather go back to physics and the idea of, you know, maybe losing a pound here, a pound there. But to me, the scales lie. It's not about the scales. It's about the size of your clothes. And your clothes are the best indicator, the best gauge of your success. Because, you know, when you're putting on lean muscle tissue, what you will do and what you want to do is you're burning a lot more calories. You know, the scale is deceiving. It might even go up. But you know what? The inches are going down, and that's the key. So don't worry about results. If physics takes over, and you'll see things happen. Your body will transform, and that's what it's about. And again, you don't have to go crazy and think that you have to change 360 degrees overnight. It doesn't happen. It doesn't work long term. And, you know, make it smart. Do it the right way. You're in this for the long haul, and that's the way I look at it.
Somebody told me once not even to own a scale in your house. If you're embarking on a fitness routine, don't even have one in your house. Is that pretty good advice?
Stephen, it's 100% true, because, you know, 5 pounds of muscle and 5 pounds of fat is, you know, 5 pounds. But what happens is, for every 1 pound of muscle that you put on, your body burns 30 to 50 calories at rest. For every 1 pound of fat that you have, your body only burns 3 calories at rest. So metabolically, the muscle takes over your body, and that's a good thing to have. But again, the scale is going to be deceiving, because muscle is more dense, but it's burning, you know, 10, 15 times more calories. And the fact is, it looks good. And so aesthetically, it makes your body change. It makes your body lose inches, which is great. But those three numbers, people are fixed on those three numbers and get obsessed about it. And that's what we're trying to de-emphasize. So you know what? It's not about the numbers. It's about the size. And that's where you have to be mentally, and you win. And you win at losing, and that's the key.
Jamie, on this program, we talk a lot generally about markets and business and innovation and entrepreneurship. How important is good physical fitness to succeeding in those other areas of our lives?
Well, Stephen, I'll tell you why it's important. It's because of energy. The fact is, if you're eating, you know, and I tell you, if you put sludge in, you're going to get sludge out. So the fact is, if you're putting in high-octane fuel, okay, and you're moving, that in itself is going to give you more energy to do more work or to do some activities that you normally want to do. And especially if you're entrepreneurial and you need energy, because, you know, there's only so many hours in the day, and you have to look at that and go, okay, you know, am I going to go through life, you know, in second gear, or I want to be, you know, in the fast lane? And the fact is, we know that food is fuel, and if you eat right, and if you get your body moving, and we know for a fact that you will have a better quality of life, which enhances your business prowess. Without a question.
Jamie, thanks for the inspiration and also for the ideas. And we're going to direct people to your website at evergreenwellness.com. And I understand part of the program is people actually get your personal email so they can ask you for advice.
You know, we thought about it, and I thought, you know, people need accountability. And they are getting my personal email because I've helped millions of people lose millions of pounds of interest, and I do it right. Stephen, I don't come from a school. I'm from Cleveland. I roll up my sleeves just like the people from Chicago. We got good work ethics. And so, hey, if I got to answer a few thousand emails here and there, so be it. I've touched one person that makes a difference to me. It's gratifying for me to help people, and that's what it's about.
All right, very good. Again, it's the 28-day size down challenge. You can read more about it at myevergreenwellness.com, and make sure you too follow on Twitter at Evergreen Today. Jamie, good of you to be with us this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Good luck, you guys.
All right. Jamie Brink is a fitness expert, and you can also find him, too, at exercisewithjamie.com, nationally recognized fitness expert. You probably remember him from the Fitness Challenge. Also, one of the other favorites was the 8-day, 8-minute abs video series. I think a lot of you probably will recognize him when you see the video of him.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures, Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures are all moving this morning, but the markets will be closed this morning. It looks like Dow futures are up 109 points for the market open tomorrow. Most markets in Europe are now in negative territory. The same for Asia, with the exception of the Nikkei. Singapore is a little higher this morning. Oil, by the way, is trading at $64.28 a barrel, which is down about 2 cents. Gold and silver are both higher. Let's find some more news for you this morning. First, the Auto Show Awards, North American Truck, Car, Utility Vehicle of the Year, will be revealed during the North American International Auto Show press preview days. The announcement's coming today at Detroit's Cobo Center. This year's car finalists are the Honda Accord, the Kia Stinger, and Toyota Camry. Truck finalists are the Chevy Colorado, the Ford Expedition, and Lincoln Navigator. Utility finalists are the Alfa Romeo Stelvio and the Honda Odyssey. The Volvo XC60 is in there as well. Last year's winner, the Chevy Bolt with a B, the Honda Ridgeline, and Chrysler Pacifica minivan. Speaking of autos, the Ford Motor Company says it will significantly increase its planned investments in electric vehicles to $11 billion by 2022 and have 40 hybrid and fully electric vehicles in its model lineup. That, according to the CEO and Chairman Bill Ford, speaking yesterday, the investment figure sharply higher than a previously announced target of $4.5 billion by 2020. This also includes cost of developing dedicated electric vehicle architectures. Ford's engineering research and development expenses for 2016 were $7.3 billion. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, January 15th. As we mentioned, a market holiday, but some events around Martin Luther King Day, including a wreath laying in Washington, D.C. There's also a Martin Luther King parade in Washington. Many other kinds of parades across the country. Secretary of State Tillerson begins a trip to Canada to co-host a meeting on North Korea. It's also likely that NAFTA will come up during that conversation as well. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, January 15th.